Good afternoon in the UK. It's 5 p.m. On Tuesday. This is What Comes Next Live, and my guest this week coming to us from Chicago. So my rough calculation means that's 11 a.m. Is Amber Naslin, or otherwise known as Amber Kadabra on Twitter for the last far too long for either of us to admit.
Far too long to admit. I think I got that like Twitter anniversary thing not long ago, and it was like 14 years, and I said to myself, like, that's as long as my daughter's been alive, which is a little weird. So, yeah, there you go.
So, for me, back then, you know, before 2010, et cetera, but probably pre-Facebook, right? It was a place where digital marketers and people doing marketing used to meet. That was the Twitter tribe I was part of, and I was doing a ton of marketing way back then. I didn't even know when you sent me an email to, you know, your email address to coordinate this. I thought, oh, that's where you work. Okay. I didn't know. It's like, so you just have occasional interactions on Twitter, which is one of the things I like about it. It's this, there's people can have a negative vibe around that. And I think maybe you just, people attract a certain tribe or different things. I've been lucky with my experience. I just don't get too many trolls. Although I'm busy supporting somebody on a gender identity issue right now, so I can imagine I'm gonna, you know, get a bit of stuff going on there right now. So
it seems to come in waves with me. I mean, I've been online in some way, shape, or form for a very, very long time, even like pre-social media, back in like IRC and bulletin boards and stuff like that. And it really is what you make of it. You know, I mean, there's always people, jerks that show up no matter how hard to try or where you decide to show up. So I just choose to not give my emotional attention to that as much as possible.
Well, it's absolutely a pleasure. I mean, not in real life or IRL, as we used to say in text speak. But it's lovely to see you on video because we've only ever exchanged the odd message on Twitter for 10 plus years.
Yeah, I'm a real life human, actually, believe it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much a real life human. And so, yeah, I mean, tell us just for the podcast audience, just tell us a little bit about yourself and whatever you want to share.
Sure. Well, I think you and I know each other through those collisions of marketing circles. So I've been a marketing wonk for probably 22 or 3 years now, I think, across multiple sectors, but the concentration of my time has been in tech and tech marketing. Mm-hmm. And I spend a lot of time writing. So Jay Baer and I published a book on social media and business way back in 2011. And I've got a couple of other books in the works right now. One's about imposter syndrome and work trauma. And one is a novel, which is totally different. I'm a single mom. I'm a pit bull rescuer. I ride horses. I don't know, like pick one of those things, I guess. But most of you have probably interacted with one of us, like on Twitter or something like that. And, my day job is that I work for LinkedIn. So my role is to take my marketing expertise and help advise our customers and clients, primarily in our media business, to help them execute better content programs on the LinkedIn platform.
Okay, cool. So content marketing specialist is what it says on the tin, right? But that's not who you are. That's one of your many hats, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I think that's a fair characterization of what I do.
I love the fact you say you write a lot. And I can't remember, it was something else on Twitter the other day that someone was saying, if you do this, if you underthink, you don't write much. If you overthink, you write a lot.
I think that's fair. I mean, I hadn't heard it put quite that way, but that's totally true. I am a chronic overthinker. And, one of my favorite, writers is a woman named Joan Didion, and Joan Didion has a very famous quote that says, "I write to discover what I think." Ugh. And like writing has been my mechanism for a very long time to sort of get the chaos that's in my mind out into some organized fashion. And sometimes I do that very personally through things like journaling. But I also do a lot of writing creatively and more in business context just to clarify my thinking. Words are sort of the mechanism that I use to do that. And so writing everything from catharsis to expression to codification of like ideas for me. So it runs the gamut.
Well, in terms of topics, I mean, the whole idea of these conversations is that people can see inside a conversation and that it's whatever guest wants to talk about. However, and unless you can go any direction you want, you can go, no, I don't want to talk about that. And that's cool. I like the idea of prolific writing as a thought. And you heard me exclaim when you mentioned the Joan Didion quote. I had never heard that. And then a guy from France who reached out to me on Twitter really to say, hey, you're doing a daily blog. What do you think about this? Do you mind if I send it to you? And he did a couple of, not daily, but really in-depth ones. His name is Remy Guillot. And he'll be coming on this weekly thing in due course. And he gave like 8 different things he'd analyzed and or deeply researched as to why people write. And halfway down the list on this long newsletter was, I write to discover my thoughts. And I went, that's me. And that was the quote. And I actually paused my blog for the first time ever a couple of weeks ago. I had not missed a day for 1,444 days.
That's insane.
It's cool. I enjoy it. And I'm inspired by Seth Godin, who, is one of the guys, right? It's like in terms of pretty much every marketer looks up to at some level. And because he's been doing it for 25 years, right? So yeah. About 4+ years ago, I started doing it. And I did pause for a week, but it was a conscious pause to shut my brain down for a week, actually. Which I managed.
It's also very necessary. I think those respites from it are important, as important as putting in the wrench time on the words.
So I think there's something around, because the number of listeners in the podcast will, a lot of people ask me and they may ask you, oh, well, how do you find time to write? What do you write about? How do you do that? So maybe just a free flow conversation, because different people have different ways to discover their thoughts. And a very profound moment for me a couple of years ago was being at a weekend event where each table looking at the world's great problems had an artist on the table. And we were looking at definitions of words. In fact, we were on the inclusion and diversity table. So what did we mean by inclusion and diversity? And then about 20 minutes in, this hand goes up and it's the artist and she's a dancer. And she said, I'm profoundly dyslexic. I can understand words. It just takes me about 5 times as long. So I feel very not included in this conversation. So she will express what she thinks and feels through movement.
Yeah.
And I may have a similarity and we'll often do it through words.
I think words for me, I kind of grew up that way. And my mom is a writer and a voracious reader. My father, not so much. He's very articulate, but he's a man of few words and is not an avid reader. But I definitely got this part of me from my mom. So lots of exposure to words as a method of communicating when I was a kid. And it has long been, I'm also a musician, so I have music expression and artistic expression in me for sure as well. I guess you could say I'm heavily right-brained in general. But words have just always been a thing I fell in love with when I was a kid. I was fascinated by the etymology of words and the origin of words and understanding how they got to be. And as I started to study, Spanish was my first foreign language that I started studying, and learning the origins of Romance languages and the roots of them in Latin and all of that stuff to me was fascinating. The evolution of English and how we've completely, the chaos of that language in general, just how difficult it is and how idiomatic it is. Anyway, so loving words for me was always sort of a thing. And then as a kid, when my parents went through a divorce, I used journaling a lot to talk about what I was feeling, what I was thinking, and my therapist encouraged me to do that. And that just sort of stuck. I mean, even now as an adult in my 40s, as part of my therapeutic process with my therapist, I do a lot of journaling. And so writing to me is not writing with a capital W, where you sit down at the typewriter with your coffee and your tweed jacket and you're always doing something disciplined. For me, it's just the process of getting words out of my head and into another place. So sometimes it's a journal, sometimes it's the back of a napkin in an airport bar because some random thing pops in my head. I'm like, oh, I have to write that down. Sometimes it's something really expansive, like a book. But like my blog has, unlike you, my blog has been sorely neglected for a really long time. I used to do that with regularity. But to me, you know, writing sometimes is as simple as an email. Like, how am I conveying this project or this need or this idea to my boss? So writing is to me is a behavior and a discipline. It's not necessarily a format of any one particular kind. So it's just something I do every day. Otherwise the crush of thoughts and ideas in my head would have nowhere else to go.
I'm literally writing that down.
Same words. It's funny to me how oftentimes when I'm feeling very restless, I struggle with anxiety disorder. So anxiousness is a thing that's kind of a struggle for me in general. And it really is putting verbal order to mental chaos for me, taking all of that like cacophony that's in my head. And sometimes, like, my sister and I have a pact that if I ever kick the bucket unexpectedly, she needs to come into my house and burn all my journals. Because if anybody were to read them, sometimes they're very articulate and sometimes they're utterly chaotic, very stream of consciousness, like just vomiting words out on paper. So the act of finding words for messy feelings and ideas is very therapeutic for me. And it may not be for everybody. I realize that for some people, writing is the hardest thing they do. So as a result, that actually is hard for me sometimes to recognize writing as one of my superpowers because it feels like so endemic to who I am that I just don't know how to separate those things. But for other people, writing is torture. So I don't know. I guess it's like they say that writers write and I don't know that I can help it.
Yeah. I mean, what you said, that there was a very short phrase that just landed for me. So I will be using this to write one of the blogs, daily blogs later this week. And the headline will be writing is a behavior. Mm-hmm. That's what you said, is writing behavior is something I do. Otherwise the crush of thoughts in my head would have nowhere else to go.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I talk about writing as a verb. It is an action. It's a thing that you do. And it doesn't, so often we characterize writing as this, as the output. Like writing is this masterful thing that we do that results in, you know, award-winning tomes of something. That's not how it is for me. Writing is just, it's a muscle. It's a thing that I exercise all the time because I need it to keep my brain organized. And sometimes it's very informal and sometimes it is more formal. Like, you know, pursuing something like a book is no small undertaking.
Absolutely.
You know, but there's lots of shades of gray in between. So a lot of the people I talk to about writing are worried that they're not a writer because they don't meet some arbitrary checklist in their head of what it means to be a writer. Writers don't necessarily have to be published. Writers don't have to be using any one particular format. Just because you don't write every day doesn't mean you're not a writer. I mean, it's just like there's all these weird tropes that we've decided are qualifying gatekeeping things about being a writer. To me, the fundamental is if you are writing, you are a writer.
Writing is a verb. It's an action, you said. I mean, I'll share. I don't think I've ever shared it quite this way publicly. So I have such an identification with what you're saying. About 4 years ago, I'm in my mid-50s. I'd never suffered any form of anxiety. If I had, it was very repressed. But I had a major episode of some personal events that were going on and I was living on my own and in a new city. I didn't know anybody and I did two things at the same time. One was I read Seth Godin celebrate that he'd done 22 years of writing every day and I went, I'll do that. All right. And the other one was I bought Ryan Holiday's Daily Stoic Journal and I started journaling twice a day. I'd never journaled. And you know, my own experience of anxiety was such that I've never felt anything as painful in my whole life. And I've had some physical injuries and stuff. So getting through that, writing was absolutely incredible. Now, I never shared any of that detail with anybody other than a few people at the time, but people started to talk to me about, so you're writing every day. What's that all about? How long does it take to do a habit? And I went, okay, this habit thing. Yeah. Okay. So it takes 30 days to start forming a habit. And there was the Hemingway quote around, you sit at a typewriter and bleed, and kind of sometimes felt that way, but I was doing it to get myself out of bed in the morning, apart from anything else. Over yeah. time, the idea that you touched on about writers write, I said, I'm a writer, I write. But I was still at that point, maybe 100 to 200 days in, identifying it by the output.
Yeah.
And I, everything you said is, I can imagine I will be pointing people to listen to this podcast who have a, they want verbal order to mental chaos if they have a cacophony in their head. And many people do. They have a lot going on. And for some people, it won't be writing. It might be exercise. It might be dance. It might be music. But for some people who words matter to them, whether it's the written word or the spoken word or both, that you know, the way you expressed it earlier on in this conversation, I feel is really, really powerful. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, there's a couple of things too. I get asked a lot about writing in general, or about the like identification of self-identification as a writer. Like, how do I get to be a writer? And it is so deadly simple. But I say to people all the time, if you want to be a writer, you have to write. And that doesn't mean that you have to get published. That doesn't mean you have to even write for anybody else to read.
Yeah.
But the act of writing is one that is honed by practice. And you can't, there's two things that are so important for writers, reading and writing. You have to consume other people's words so that you can start to understand what your own style and expression and things are. But you have to put pen or keyboard or whatever to paper at some point and practice that. The same way, if you want to get good at riding a bike, you have to put a lot of pedal time in. If you want to get good at riding a horse, you have to put a lot of saddle time in. If you want to get good at writing, you got to put a lot of writing time in. And I think people get daunted by the idea of all of this, like this mountain to climb. But legitimately, there are days where I don't write any words at all. And then there are days where I write thousands. And then there are lots of days in between where it's little bursts here and there and little scribbled things. There's a book that's wonderful called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, if you're not familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And she talks about a practice called morning pages.
Yes.
And it is literally the practice of waking up in the morning and using words to convey whatever happens to be in your brain. And it's, she encourages it to be a very stream of consciousness, mm-hmm. like no internal editor involved here, just meandering words on a page. And the idea is to like grease the skids of your creativity and kind of get those gears moving in your brain. And it is, for me, it was absolutely transformational mm-hmm. to unlock the idea that my words don't have to be polished, pretty, formal. They don't have to be finished. They don't have to be any of it. And they're not even for other people's consumption. They are simply part of how I process what's going on in my head. And separating like writing as an art for me, as writing as a discipline, was really important, because I had this bar of like, it always has to be pretty and amazing. And then some of the stuff I write is just absolutely ugly, but it's a process that I need to go through to work on the stuff that's in my brain. So I will, I mean, I have, you can't see, but I have like piles of notebooks over here, because that's how I process.
I'll share one on the other side of that equation, because you said there were two things. If people are going to write, they need to do two things a lot. They need to write and they need to read. One of the guests I had on a while ago does a really cool, fun weekly newsletter of just almost a stream of consciousness, 14 bullet points, each with a link. Mm-hmm. His name's Nick Parker. And I think, what does he do for a day job? He's a copywriter. And he started to put some bullet points up on, I think his newsletters might have been on Twitter, but I think he's most active with his weekly email newsletter. And he just wrote, published this little self-published book on reading, and I have a copy, and it changed my relationship to reading. Because I used to be the guy who had hundreds of books and, you know, electronic versions too, but I like real books, and I'd read a ton. Long form books, long sittings for hours on end. One of the things that, and I can't explain it, but over the last years, I've not done that much. I think I spend at least an hour a day writing, No tweed jacket, as you mentioned, but I do sit at my keyboard and I boot up the WordPress and I go, what shall I write about today? And it flows. And sometimes it's 100 words, sometimes it's 1,000 words, sometimes I do 4 in a day, sometimes I do 1 a day late. But the reading was a problem, but his book On Reading by Nick Parker is great. And one of the several ones come to mind that often just a sentence on a page, those kind of books. And one was The Unit of Reading is a Chapter. Which I just adored. And another one was, you know, well, various ideas. It's like, if in doubt, buy the book, right? Yeah. I've got too many unread books. Just buy the book. Have piles of books. Have one, a pile by your bed, a pile on your coffee table, a pile in your office.
I very much treat books as like, if I'm going to have a vice, there are many worse ones I can have than a pile of unread books. There's actually a Japanese word for that, which is like, and I'm not going to recall it. Maybe you can look it up for your listeners later, but it's the art of collecting a bunch of books that you don't read. It's just like the practice of collecting the books, whether you read them or not. And it really resonated with me because it also gave me permission to your point, sample a lot of books. Like I have one that I'm reading by my bedside. I have one that I'm reading on my Kindle. I have one that's in my bag at all times. So I kind of distribute my attention across a lot of different books. And I also have no compunction about putting down books that don't interest me. Like the idea that we have to finish every book that we start is ridiculous. Like there's only so many hours in the day. And if I don't find the topic interesting or the writer interesting or the story interesting, like why would I torture myself sitting there reading the thing? But it also teaches me a little bit about the kind of writer I don't want to be. So when I read things that I don't enjoy, I sometimes ask myself, like, why did I not enjoy that? What about it was not working for me? So that helps me kind of shape my own writing style and execution.
That's a really interesting point. If people are considering writing a book at some point, you know, what do they like reading? What don't they like reading? And, you know, you aren't going to tend to mold your audience towards yourself. And when I started as a coach about a dozen years ago and I moved out of a role in sort of marketing and other such things into coaching and leadership work, I was devouring every book under the sun in that, and I'd read them all the way through. What did I find with most of them, like most business books? Once you've got the core idea, you can put the book down.
Yep.
It's like... but one book I reference quite a lot in these conversations is a book I did read all the way through really easily last year. It's an author called David Badanis, and he wrote a book called The Art of Fairness. And really, there were three tenets that he had around what does it take to be a leader who is fair. But the question he posed was, do you have to be fair to succeed? And of course, the answer, as we all know, if we worked in corporates of any size, is not necessarily. But he did it in such a beautifully framed storytelling. I wanted to read the whole thing. And what he did is he compared Roosevelt, right, FDR, to effectively his counterpart, which is Goebbels.
How interesting.
Through their whole life stories and from a different lens of how did their behavior towards other people impact their, in quotes, success. So I absolutely devoured it because of the storytelling. I'm a storyteller. So I do a lot of work verbally with people and I'll tell a story to make a point. I might ramble on a bit, but I'll tell a story to make a point. Your point is just landing for me around, you know, working out how you like to read and consume other writers' work will necessarily inform the type of writer you're going to be, because it takes a huge, I've got a book in me, but I don't have the strong enough desire to get the message out to people in book form to go through the rigorous process. And you have been published.
If anybody who's written a book can tell you, it's 20% writing the book and 80% marketing the book. If you ever want anybody to buy it or read it, that is. So, you know, the mountain of writing a book isn't just the writing. It's the getting the book, birthing the book into the world is exponentially more difficult than writing the thing. But when it comes to like reading, and I should also say, like, it is perfectly legitimate if you are not a person who enjoys reading books, but you like listening to books, consuming the book, whatever. Like if you're an audio file, like by all means, do it that way. I don't personally care for audiobooks. But there's this weird culture of like, you're not really reading if you're listening to an audiobook. And I call BS on that. Like, no, not, absolutely not. You're consuming the story and the information one way or the other. So it's perfectly valid. But reading is as much an exploration of the craft of writing as it is sometimes reading the story. So I'm one of those nerds who I'm not just reading a book. Sometimes I'm analyzing the way the story is told, whether that's a book that I'm reading for business purposes or a novel I'm reading for enjoyment. And I read a ton of fiction stuff just for fun. And a lot of it is like cheesy, beachy read stuff. Like I read like plenty of very light reading, just because I want to turn my brain off. But even then I'm still taking note of like turns of phrase or the way somebody structured a character or thinking about how that story arc, you know, journeyed us through something. I mean, I'm always like present in that stuff. And I feel like a little bit, maybe I'm a weirdo, but.
Well, you said some, I wasn't nerd, but you used some term at the beginning about marketing, like, about like being really deep into it. But I think it much more applies to your, you and the written word. What occurs to me around that is an extension of the thought around the on reading piece is, there's a Scottish author, who does crime novels called Ian Rankin.
And I know Ian Rankin. Yeah. I love those novels actually. I
read all of his books and one of them I got, you know, the one 2 ago I got and, I realized I wasn't reading it very fast, but at the same time I picked up Nick Parker's book and I went, I'm going to indulge in some slow reading. You can only ever read a book for the first time once. And I went, I love his Inspector Rebus novels and I'm going to pick up this hardback with a cup of coffee in the sun in the winter months. And I'm going to read no more than 6 pages every day. And I managed to drag out reading this book for about 3 months.
Hey, you know, if you enjoy it, I reread books that I enjoy because I enjoy it and I find something new every time. There's a case to be made for both. If you haven't read Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, highly recommend it because it's like our brain needs both of those things, fast processing of information and slow digestion of information. And I do both in the way that I read and write for that matter. But obviously like words, both expressing them and consuming them are so central to how I process thoughts that I don't know that I could divorce those things from one another, which is why I laugh a little bit when I have my own moments of imposter syndrome where I'm like, am I really a writer? And then I laugh because I don't know how to not be.
Just thinking of your professional day job role, you know, helping organizations really craft their content. And if they knew that you'd gone way, way, way beyond Gladwell's 10,000 hour rule and in lots of different eclectic directions, such as the etymology of foreign words and romance languages, then you, at some point, the snarky hat that you can wear with your very fun weekly newsletter, can be going, oh, yeah. Do they not know who I am? It's like.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the snarky, funny weekly newsletter because I've just had that sort of collision of my professional and personal worlds. Starting with that one where I've got like work colleagues and stuff subscribed to that one now. And it's like, well, if you wanted to know the real me, here you go.
There's bits of that. But yeah, I mean, another third reason I had for starting writing when I did was because I work with senior corporate leaders, kind of the consigliere if you're a movie fan with The Godfather.
Yeah.
So it was a sounding board. And quite often, how often can you imagine that I sit next to them and they go, they're thinking of some leadership thought and I go, have you read this book by so-and-so? And what do you think a senior corporate leader is going to say to me? Tom, when am I going to have the time to read that? What does it say? Yeah. So I actually started writing going, over a year or so, I'll get most of those references and concepts out. So you mentioned a very, very important book called Thinking Fast and Slow by Danny Kahneman, who won the Nobel Prize in economics for really being the founder of behavioral economics. And it's in every airport, right? And a lot of people have it on their coffee table. But even if I told them to read it, and they're not going to read it. They're going to go, so what does it say? So I'm kind of, in American language, I'm the cliff notes of leadership thinking because I will have read it and read around it and read it 3 times and read all kinds of different angles on it. And so therefore, yeah, I kind of know what I'm talking about when it comes to that. So I'm listening to you talk and going, if you want to know words and how to use them to express an idea. I have taken notes of some of the things which I imagine you originally wrote down to get clarity, but you've repeated them a few times. So you know about, you know, that the language around the verbal order to mental chaos, the cacophony in your head. And to clarify, those thoughts will have come from journaling or writing or napkins or 1,000-word pieces or long emails. So I really love this. I want to honor your time and not go too far over half an hour. I've really loved this conversation, and I love these conversations I have with amazing guests, because it helps people see inside a conversation, see inside somebody's thinking. And this is people through this, I hope people have both seen inside, as I have in our first actual conversation in after more than a decade, a little bit about what your process is and how that comes out onto the page. And by the way, gosh, you're expert.
Thank you. Thank you. I writing is obviously a very passionate topic of mine. So I've enjoyed our conversation, and I really appreciate you letting me explore this a little bit with you.
And if you'd like a last word or two for the guests, that'd be great.
Well, I guess especially on this topic, I think if I can convey anything to someone listening to this conversation, it's if writing is a thing that you think that you want to do, not something you think you have to do, but something you think you want to do, just start. I mean, I know that sounds like very pedantic, sort of like self-helpy advice, but the reality is, writing is a thing that you can't do without, you can't do it philosophically. You can't do it theoretically. You can't look at writing and say, wow, that's a nifty idea, without getting your hands dirty in the words, and your mind dirty in the words. So like, get in there and start doing it. And as always, you know, come find me if you need a compatriot to kick your butt, because I'm happy to do it.
Writing is a behavior. If you want to write, just start. Yep. Thank you, Amber. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, Tom.